joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. One reason for the rapid spread of the H1N1 virus earlier this year may be that people went to work sick. Workers without paid sick leave may not be able to stay at home, thus infecting others in the workplace. Researchers Jody Hyman and Allison Earle examined the working conditions of 55,000 households in 7 countries to find out what it would cost to provide good working conditions for everyone. Their work is the subject of a brand new book. It's titled Raising the Global Floor. Jody Hyman joins me in the studio. She is founding director of the Institute for Health and Social Policy at McGill University. She's the author of 10 books. We do invite your calls, questions, comments, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Good morning to you, Jody. It's good to have you here.
Good morning, Diane. It's a pleasure to be here.
You start with 2 stories. One of Luis Marquez in the Dominican Republic and Victor Kowalski, who moved from Poland to Iceland. Tell us about their stories.
Well, we start with these 2 stories and tell many stories in Raising the Global Floor just to illustrate what country you're in makes an enormous difference. If you're in one country, you get paid sick leave, as one of them did, in order to care for yourself, your family. Another country, you lose the job. Sadly, I think for most Americans, right now there are 60 million Americans without paid sick leave. This puts us completely out of whack with the rest of the world, and we could tell not just 2 stories, but literally millions of stories
now,
in America about
this. How did that happen? How did the United States become one of the lesser providers as opposed to one of the greater, considering the fact that ours is called the wealthiest country in the world?
Well, there was this experiment in the United States, and the experiment had 2 aspects. One was to see if the private sector would just voluntarily provide paid sick leave, maternity leave, paternity leave. And the answer to that was some companies do, and the good news is there are millions of Americans that do have these policies because of it, and there are also thousands of companies that have shown it's feasible. They can compete and provide these policies. But the bad news is that, take sick leave as an example, about half of Americans, middle-class Americans, more than the rich, but the poor more than the middle class, but people across the whole country lack this benefit. The second part of the experiment was the argument which we really take on in Raising the Global Floor. The argument was that, and this is why there hasn't been reform yet, that the United States simply couldn't afford it, that we would have more unemployment if we guaranteed Americans basic conditions for themselves, a vacation, a sick day, or their families. We would be less competitive. The data just completely does not support that.
Help me to understand the data you used, how you went about doing your research that finally came to this conclusion.
Well, so for the past 8 years, both at Harvard and McGill, we put together the largest data center on labor policies around the world. So we looked at labor policies in 190 out of 192 UN countries, so almost the entire world, a team that was fluent in 10 languages. We went through all of this. Because we had this together for the first time, we could actually look at how these the facts about it, not the theory. Do the labor policies actually affect unemployment? Do they affect competitiveness? Now, we measured those not just for 1 year, because a country can have a good year or a bad year, but over a 10-year period. Were countries able to consistently have low unemployment and good policies, or did they lose jobs, as has been predicted? Could they compete, not by anybody's measure, but by business leaders' measures? So the World Economic Forum, business leaders around the world saying, what are the countries we most want to be in because they're most competitive? We looked at whether you could be a top competitor, again, for 8 to 10 years.
And your conclusions were that?
Well, the conclusions are very stark. I'll just start with a couple policies, the sick leave, because you mentioned it at the beginning, and because it's actively being debated in the United States. 163 countries around the world have paid sick leave. In the United States, we're debating whether Americans will get a guarantee of 7 days. Just to give you a sense of how minuscule that is, nearly 100 countries give 6 months or more. 155 countries give 2 weeks or more. So even if we pass the 7 days, we'd be at the very bottom. But each time it comes to the Senate or Congress, the argument is we can't afford it.
We're going to lose jobs.
We're going to lose jobs. Yeah. So what are the numbers? Of the lowest unemployment countries, 11 of the 13 offer paid sick days.
Who are the lowest unemployment countries?
Well, so we look around the world, but we also look, for example, at the OECD, the sort of European and Asian top economies. Places like Japan, the Netherlands, Norway, these all have paid sick days. Who doesn't besides the United States? Just South Korea. Of the most competitive countries around the world, 14 out of 15 offer paid sick days. The only one who doesn't is the United States. So if you're in Japan, Germany, Norway, Netherlands, Switzerland, Singapore, the list goes on. You have those paid sick days and your country's a top competitor.
And what you're saying is clearly that there is a government ruling in each of those countries which mandates that businesses across the board provide that paid sick leave. Here in the United States, the debate is over whether the government should mandate 7 days.
In all of those countries, there's a guarantee. Now, that guarantee occurs in a couple different ways. For the short number of days, if you need 5 days for the flu, typically a business would provide it. For the long days, if you have cancer and you need a 3-month leave, that tends to be social insurance. Just like our social security system helps elderly Americans, their social security system would help the aging. So it's paid for not entirely by businesses. They understand, most of these countries, that for the long-term leave, that'd be very hard for individual businesses. That burden is shared. For the short-term leave, it's paid for by companies.
Jody Hyman, she and Allison Earle are the writers, researchers on the new book, Raising the Global Floor, Dismantling the Myth that We Cannot Afford Good Working Conditions for Everyone. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. And you can also reach us through Facebook and Twitter. So, the bottom line, do working conditions make countries more competitive or less competitive?
Well, I think what we know is that a number of them, in fact, make countries more competitive. And at a minimum, they make workers healthier. They make them more, their families better off economically and don't hurt competition. So they're the two groups. I'll give you an example of the ones that make them more competitive. The countries that invest in the next generation, they provide paid maternity leave. You know, 177 countries around the world provide paid maternity leave. The United States doesn't. To find other countries that don't, you have to go to places like Sierra Leone after the war. You have to go to Liberia post-war, Papua New Guinea. There are very few countries. And in fairness to Papua New Guinea, we say they don't, but you can take 6 days of sick leave. So they have more than the United States for this. Those countries, when they invest, it absolutely improves their economy because the next generation is better off. Women are more fully in the workforce, so they're competing with both hands, not just one hand.
I'm stunned as I look at this list and the amount of leave provided for mothers. For example, Mexico, 6 weeks of leave before childbirth, 6 weeks after childbirth, paid at 100% of earnings. And that's compared or contrasted to the United States, where you have 12 weeks of unpaid leave. Now, obviously, that depends on where you work, because some employers are clearly more generous than others.
However, when it comes to paid maternity leave, there are frighteningly few employers that are generous, actually. Less than 1 in 10 workers get any kind of paid family leave. So practically none in the United States. More than that can use some of their disability for maternity if they actually have a health problem, but most cannot.
Jody Hyman of McGill University. Her new book is titled Raising the Global Floor, Dismantling the Myth That We Can't Afford Good Working Conditions for Everyone. And welcome back. Jody Hyman is here with me. She's with McGill University and the founding director of the Institute for Health and Social Policy there. She and her co-author, Allison Earle, have written a new book all about working conditions around the world, what makes for good working conditions, how much sick leave various countries have, where the United States stand on maternity leave, paternity leave, even breastfeeding breaks. The book is titled Raising the Global Floor, Dismantling the Myth That We Can't Afford Good Working Conditions for Everyone. Here's an email from Andy, who says, how did the U.S. get into the bottom of the list in sick leave? I advocate that policymakers are more likely to be an employer. When laws are written, they are then more likely written by an employer.
Well, thank you for your question, Andy. I think what's remarkable, though, is that most of the world's countries, employers and employees alike, agree that it's reasonable to have basic benefits. And this is true across the world. I'll just give two examples on maternity leave. When we started this research, at the very beginning, I used to say that New Zealand and Australia, which are fairly conservative on this kind of policy didn't have them. But New Zealand already passed paid parental leave. Australia has committed to doing it in 2011. My rap used to say, it's Lesotho, Liberia, Papua New Guinea, and Swaziland besides the USA. And then I got an email from Lesotho saying, please drop us from that list. We've reached agreement across employees and employers. We've passed it. We're no longer like the United States.
Interesting. Tell me if what you see as the effects of not having these guarantees. You talked about the future generations, but what about people, for example, who work in restaurants and cannot take time off?
Well, I think there are huge effects both on the people who lack the leave and on everyone else in the country, and both are important. First, the people who lack the leave. Right now, we're in difficult economic times. Many people have less savings than they do. They have lower incomes. The last thing they can do is afford to take leave with no pay, and yet they have to. People get sick, family members get sick, they have an elderly parent who needs to be moved, they take the time off. In other countries, that would be paid, and it's not here. But for anybody who's listening who feels, okay, I've got paid leave, but what about, so I'm okay, I don't have to worry about the rest of the country. I think what we have to recognize, restaurant workers are a great example. Half of norovirus, at least, some estimates say as high as 93%, that's what causes diarrhea in restaurants, is spread by restaurant workers going to work sick. Why do they go to work when they have diarrhea? Because they have no choice, because they need the income and they would lose it. So even if you yourself have sick leave, when the restaurant worker doesn't, you're at risk of getting diarrhea. When the nursing home worker doesn't, your elderly mom or dad is at much higher risk of getting a respiratory infection, of getting diarrhea. Same at childcare, same if any family member is being cared for.
How many countries allow for leave to care for not just a child, but another family member?
So while the number allowing it for another family member is smaller than the number allowing it for themselves, it still is most of Europe and most of the affluent countries. So we'll take children's health needs. 48 countries give paid leave for children's health. 33 countries give paid leave for adult family members. And to give you a flavor of this, as you know, I'm down now from Canada. Canada has lower unemployment than the United States. And yet, for every 6 months that you're working, you can get 6 weeks of paid leave to care for a family member.
Interesting. So what become the arguments against providing those kinds of benefits?
Well, I think the arguments have been a couple. One, that it would be abused, but actually what we see in most countries that provide quite generous leave is that it's not abused. People go to work for other reasons. Workplaces can tell if somebody really has leave. I just mentioned the generous leave in Canada. That's reserved for a seriously sick or dying family member. They make sure it's used when it's truly needed. The second argument has been that it's unaffordable, but the statistics clearly show they don't. I just want to illustrate that with one country, because sometimes the big numbers, it's hard to follow. But let's just take one, Norway. Norway, in the last year, had twice the GDP growth as the United States. It had a third the unemployment rate, clearly doing much better. And yet, everybody got more than a month of paid vacation. They were entitled to more than 6 months of sick leave, more than a year of maternity or paternity leave, 2 years during which they could breastfeed while they were working. They were investing in workers. They were affording to do it, but they were keeping unemployment rates down and competitiveness high.
But Jody, if in fact you have uncovered this kind of research, if you have shown the beneficial results of providing this kind of leave, who or what is standing in the way of the U.S. to guarantee this kind of leave for workers?
Well, I think one thing we need all Americans to do, including all listeners, is to start calling congressmen and senators and people and make sure that our representatives are hearing from the public about this. They hear from representatives of the business community. Now, they don't hear from all of the business community, and I think that's very important to point out, because half of American companies do provide these policies.
Half.
But they haven't taken, well, half for some of the basic ones like sick leave and vacation leave,
right.
Much fewer for maternity or
okay.
paternity. But they don't, those who are providing it have not stepped forward, those companies, and say, let's guarantee it for everybody. The voice of businesses who are loud as lobbyists, loud as contributors to congressmen and senators, is no legislation. And that can be countered, but it needs to be countered by Americans who see it impacting their lives and who are going to their representatives and saying that they care, that it matters.
So does the U.S. guarantee any workers' rights?
Well, the U.S. does guarantee some workers' rights. So the U.S. guarantees, for example, overtime pay. But if you look at most of these policies, first on the family side, 132 countries guarantee breastfeeding breaks. The United States doesn't. I mentioned 177 paid leave for new mothers. U.S. doesn't. 74 countries paid leave for new fathers. The U.S. doesn't. We talked about the countries that guarantee paid leave for kids' health and elderly family members. The U.S. doesn't. And if you have no family you're caring for, paid sick leave, 163 countries. The U.S. doesn't. Paid annual leave, also called vacation leave, but for many families and individuals, they might have to move. They might have to take care of other things. It may not even be a vacation, but that paid annual leave, 164 countries, the United States doesn't. And at least one day of rest a week, not paid, but at least you get one day off, 157 countries, the U.S. doesn't. You get the notion. When I've given these talks in public areas, I list it, and then the audience starts with a refrain, the U.S. doesn't, because it's so repetitive, the picture, unfortunately.
Now, do you think that has been because Americans haven't demanded that kind of leave policy? That they keep hearing the unemployment rate, so they're afraid to say, demand more or call their own member of Congress and say, we need this, and the member of Congress is likely to say, how can you say this in an era of high unemployment?
Well, there certainly are groups across the country that have been working very hard for paid sick leave and that have been working very hard for paid parental leave. So I think Americans have been demanding it. It is the case that campaign finance is different in the United States than in many of these countries. I don't want to say that's the only piece, but that is a piece that's markedly different. Because of that, senators and congressmen and women do get large contributions from business interests that have taken one side, and that needs to be countered by an effective voice on the other side. So I think it's about that response. But it's also the case, and this gets back to the question from our first listener, in other countries, business groups recognize this as an advantage to them in order to compete. They don't want their workers coming to work sick. They know it spreads to other people. They don't want their workers to work such long hours that their productivity declines. So they see the benefits, they've been less afraid of it, and that makes a difference.
You know, the same arguments have come up in regard to the minimum wage. Every single time a member of Congress pushes for an increase in the minimum wage, you hear this loud rejoinder that you're doing nothing but shipping jobs overseas. So the question becomes, is there a voice loud enough on the workers' side I mean, the unions are slowly diminishing in this country. Is there a website? Is there a group that you're aware of in this country actively working for better conditions?
So I think there are a number of groups working on this. I think MomsRising.org is a internet-based group that has organized around many of these issues for families, not just for mothers, for fathers, for kids, for all affected, even though it's called MomsRising.org. The National Partnership for Women and Family has organized around sick leave, had a leadership role around the passage of the Family Medical Leave Act. And listeners should be aware that many states across the country, and you can find out this information at the National Partnership's website, also have state campaigns on this.
Has your book gone to a member of Congress?
I certainly hope so. It's
but has you it gone? Need to do that yeah. yourself, don't
you're,
you?
You're right. I do. I have given a briefing on Capitol Hill that was co-sponsored by Senator Dodd, so he indeed has it. But we do need to make sure that the information is available across Capitol Hill.
Jody Hyman, she's talking about dismantling the myth that we cannot afford good working conditions for everyone. The book is titled Raising the Global Floor. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. And we're going to open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First to Frankfort, Indiana. Good morning, Bob. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call.
Surely.
I have wondered if Ms. Hyman has any comparable statistics for the living conditions in those countries, for the minimum wages in those countries that supply the full benefits. And what struck me was the 6 weeks before and after maternity leave for the mother in Mexico. And I know that the rate of pay in Mexico is less if the rumors are true that we're shipping jobs to Mexico to save money.
Thank you, Bob. I think what's important to realize is that countries with lower incomes, but also countries with higher incomes than the United States, have these policies. I mentioned Norway earlier. The minimum wage is substantially higher in Norway. I could tell you about Germany or the Netherlands. These are countries, again, with very strong living conditions and in many ways better economic indicators. Netherlands, as Norway does, twice the GDP growth in the past year as the United States, a third the unemployment, but still has the month or more of paid annual leave, the 6 months or more of paid sick leave. So you do find this across economies. What you're raising is the question we've always been asked, but it just isn't borne out in the data. Why is that? I think a few reasons. When somebody goes to work sick, they spread that to everyone. If they have an infectious disease, they now instead of just one person out, there may be three people who are sick, or five people who are sick, or up to 10 people, we've been told, with influenza. That leads to a lot of costs to the company and a lot of lowering of productivity. We know in terms of things like vacation leave or having reasonable hours that when you get above a certain number of hours a year, that workers are less productive per hour. So these are actually harming our competitiveness, not helping. It doesn't mean there aren't any policies that we should worry about that might be look on the paper at initially beneficial, but could have bad economic effects. But most of these core policies don't.
But as Bob points out, the minimum wage in Mexico, where all of this leave is available, is, I'm sure, a fair amount less than that of the U.S.
Oh, absolutely. As I say, there are countries where the leave is available, where the minimum wage is substantially higher, like Norway, like Iceland. There are countries where it's less, like Mexico or Lesotho, and they still manage to afford it. So is this driving down wages? It's not. We know that from the countries that have higher wages and better competitiveness records. Is it affordable even in poor countries? Yes. The reason it's affordable in poor countries is these benefits really make up a small fraction of wages.
I hope that answers it, Bob.
It does. The other correlation I'd like to see are the ones in the U.S. who pay similar benefits versus those who don't. What type of competitiveness or efficiencies they have?
It's a great question. I think the piece we know about it is that it's actually the higher wage jobs in general that provide it in the United States and the stronger employers in general. That
Jody Hyman, the book is titled Raising the Global Floor. I look forward to hearing your questions and comments when we come back. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe, on the web at germany.info. From the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, fashion designer turned director Tom Ford talks about adapting the Christopher Isherwood novel A Single Man into a new film.
Beginning to wonder if I was ever going to be able to turn this novel into a film. And he said to me out of the blue, make it your own. The novel is the novel. Make this film your own.
Join us.
And let's go right back to the phones to New Philadelphia, Ohio. Good morning, Bob. You're on the air.
Never thought I'd be calling you, but I have a little experience. I spent some time in Australia and New Zealand. And I can tell you in New Zealand, I know that if you have any minimum job, a fast food job, where you start the first year, you automatically are entitled to 4 weeks vacation. And there's other sick leave, and I've heard these other arguments for years, and I could comment on a few other things, but this is what we're talking about today. And,
sure.
And I think that in this country, I also owned a business, and a very successful business, and it wasn't because of me. It was because I had good employees. You pay them well. And you give them benefits, and those are the ones that make your company go.
And, Bob, tell me why you never thought you'd be calling us.
Well, I listen quite often, but this is something that really, really, I've thought this for years, what she's talking
sure.
about, what she's writing. And,
good.
And I think we need to do better for our employees in this country.
Thanks for calling, Bob. Go ahead, Jody.
Thank you so much for that comment, Bob. And what you said about your employees is exactly what I've heard from other employers as we've interviewed them who do provide these benefits. I mean, they really deeply understand, as one CEO told me, that you make things work for your employees, and then you can ride on their coattails. They take the company forward. And so I appreciate your comment about what a difference it makes to make that investment.
But the question becomes, is it the responsibility of the businessman like Bob, or is it the responsibility of government to implement these kinds of changes?
And I think, Diane, that was a very fair question when this experiment began in the United States. And one might say it began 50 years ago when many other countries had passed it, and we tried this voluntary experiment. But what we found is that 60 million Americans don't have paid sick leave right now, that tens of millions don't have paid annual leave. And when it's the case that the Centers for Disease Control and the president are calling for Americans to stay home when they're sick, mm-hmm. but they can't afford to, then it is the business of the government, because it affects all of us, not just the individuals themselves or their employers themselves.
Here's an email from Susie, who says, what does the typical Norwegian citizen pay in taxes? Isn't it about 75%? And they have universal health care.
Let me address the tax question, which I'm glad you raised, and I'll give it for Canada. I'd be delighted to give it for Norway, but I haven't memorized the tax rates for all 192 countries, and I can answer it, I think, very succinctly looking at the Canadian example, because in Canada there is universal health care. There is paid maternity leave, paternity leave, there's sick leave, there's this paid leave I mentioned for elderly, for kids. Are there more taxes? Yes. Are they much higher? No, they're not much higher. It's still, even in Quebec, which is the province with the highest taxes, you'd still be paying under 50%. In other provinces, you'd be paying much lower. But what it means, I don't know if any other listeners do, but I have a high school senior. He's applying to universities in the U.S. and in Canada, and if he goes to the United States, he'll be charged $50,000 a year, and if he goes to university in Quebec, in the top university in the country and one of the top in the world, he'll pay $1,800 a year. So when you think about taxes, you have to, again, they're only slightly higher, but you have to think about the whole cost an individual or family pays. And the reality is that we pay so much less in Canada in terms of health care, in terms of education, that you get much more of it back than is being paid in.
It's so interesting, because you're well aware of the health care debate going on right now. And, of course, proponents look at what Canada has done and say, why can't we in the U.S. have that universal health care? Opponents say, Canada's going broke. Canada can't afford this. There are long waiting lines. You can't get to a doctor when you want, and so on and so on. What has your experience been?
Well, I run an institute, and I have many employees there, and like anywhere, they get a series of health problems. And while the Canadian system isn't perfect, like any system, what I can say is when they have a problem that needs to be addressed, they just go get care, and they're not charged. So what you find is that one of my employees has a problem with her eyes. She goes, she sees somebody, she gets the medicine, no charge. Everybody has access when they need it. Are there gaps that could be improved in Canada? Sure, there are gaps, but it's having been in both systems, and I'm a physician as well as a PhD in public policy, there's just no difference between the challenge there and in the United States to get essential care.
And, of course, in this country, there are many people who lack that kind of essential care coverage, who end up in emergency rooms, and taxpayers as a whole pay for that.
On the way over, I was speaking to a Washington resident who had gone to the emergency room for a leg injury. And they, in the end, decided he had nothing but ice, and they charged him $2,000 at a time he didn't have insurance. You know, just impossible to pay for. That's not the kind of situation that happens in most countries around the world. And for listeners who feel they have the best care, they might just look at the surveys that have recently been done by the Commonwealth Fund that actually shows, if you ask Americans, we're not doing as well as other countries in how people feel about the quality of
care. All right, let's go to Lake City, Florida. Hi there, Charles. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This is an issue that really affects me greatly because I know that in recent years, the pharmaceutical companies have widely benefited from people being sick. There are companies that have life insurance on their employees. So when they die, the companies benefit from this. Isn't it more beneficial economically for these companies to have sick people? Because if you have a sick employee who quits, well, you don't have to pay their insurance anymore, and you can hire someone else who's knocking at the door to get a job. So I think this is, you know, an issue that won't be solved until people start to take note of what's going on. It's like, as a country, most of us are just cowed, and you know, we don't have demonstrations. We don't demand things of our representatives.
I've spoken to companies across the United States and around the world, and what I'm struck by is none of the companies want sick employees because they pay such a high cost for them. They pay it in loss of productivity of the employee themselves, loss of productivity of others working with them, spread of illness. Now, many of them don't offer health insurance. Some of them do, but others don't, because it's very expensive for them to offer health insurance. We do see jobs moving out of the United States across the border and to Europe, to countries where health insurance is nationally paid for. And I could understand why you might feel that the companies don't care about the health of employees when they're not paying for it. In the United States, this can be a third of their wages. That's why most countries make this national. I will mention, when you said, well, why aren't people asking for more, I think it's sad that it's in the United States the solutions have been so complex that many people aren't sure what the solutions are. So right now, the U.S. proposal, the last I kept track, 1,700 pages, and having worked on health reform, I understand why that is. It's because they're trying to plug all those holes that the insurance companies are doing. When Canada passed universal health care, the bill was 8 pages long. Everybody understood what it did.
Wow. That's quite a statement. I wish you could present that statement on the floor of both the House and the Senate here in the United States. Let's go to Brady, who's in Acton, Maine. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Diane.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to mention that I have a relative who works in a cafeteria in a hospital, and they get so many sick days a year. But once they go over those sick days, if they go too far over, they end up getting fired. Now, they're told not to come in if they're sick, but like I said, if they go too far over, they're gone. So they got to come in when they're sick.
Thank you for raising that example, Brady. I think it's so important at so many levels. The, you know, your relative is working in a cafeteria. They're working in a hospital where we should be particularly concerned. But these are exactly the places where while your relative has some number of sick days and then is punished for over that, many people working in the healthcare or caregiving professions, who are also many who are working in restaurants, have no sick days. And you're absolutely right. What they do is then go in sick. We know from surveys that have asked Americans that about half of them probably go to work sick when they don't have paid sick days. That makes sense. That's the only choice they have, but it affects their health and affects their kids' health and everybody they're in contact with.
Thanks for calling, Brady. Now to Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi there, Caleb. You're on the air.
How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
I'm trying to address a broader concern in which I see this as simply one of many symptoms of a kind of political bottlenecking where, this, you know, if you look at statistics across the board, disparity has increased dramatically since the early 70s. Real wages have fallen. Some say that in 2009, 16% of income wealth only was held by 1% of the population. And also, as a final kind of remark on that, I think there's an interesting decline in progressive policy in terms of taxation. You know, from the 30s to the early 1980s, the top marginal income tax bracket fledged between maybe 76% to 80%, whereas by 1990, after the Reaganomic kind of influx, it had fallen to 35%, where it's been ever since. And I'm wondering if your caller has anything to say about what she sees as a kind of larger culture or political culture towards plutonomy, towards plutocracy in this country, and if anything can be done about addressing this kind of synergy of rich favoring policies.
Caleb, thanks for your call. You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Jody.
I think it's incredibly important that you raise this issue of disparities, and let me mention a couple of things about it. I often, when I'm telling these statistics, talk about how they affect us all, because they do indeed affect us all, and I want people to remember that they can't feel comfortable just because they have sick leave. If the parents of the other children in the child care center or the school don't have sick leave, they'll be sending their children to school sick and infecting your own children. It affects us all. At the same time, are there inequalities? There absolutely are inequalities. So some numbers that illustrate those. We looked over a five-year period. Now, of the top quarter of income in the United States, 40% of them couldn't rely on paid sick days. That's incredible for the best off. But at the bottom, 75% couldn't rely on paid sick leave. So they needed it more, and they were far worse off. That would be true for annual leave, for paid family leave, for any of these. So the people who need the pay the most are the least likely to have it. The other piece of it is this exacerbates disparities. Women are more likely to be caregiving. They're more likely to need to take leave to care for kids or adult family members, but they're less likely to have it. So it widens gender disparities. It widens income disparities.
All right. Let's hear another perspective from Josh in Arcadia, Oklahoma. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hi there, Diane. I appreciate it. It's an honor to be able to be on your show.
Thank you.
Points that I'd like to make.
Sure.
First, I believe the guest is drawing an unfair comparison by comparing the United States to some of these other countries. I think our GDP is greater than the sum total of the next three economies in the world. And secondly, America, we're a capitalist society. It's the decision of the business owner to decide how to compensate their employees fairly and to determine what is fair and what is not fair in an attempt to keep them around. It's not the job of the federal government, and that's what makes America America.
All right, sir. Thanks for your call.
In terms of the fact that we're a capitalist country, I think the most important thing to note, Josh, is that many of those who provide this are very strong capitalist economies. Nobody would call Japan anything but a capitalist economy. And when we go through the list, when you get 177 countries with paid leave for new moms or 163 with paid sick leave, do you have them across the whole political spectrum and the whole approach to government? Many of these are just as firmly, strongly believing in pure capitalism with little market interference as the United States.
But it does go back to that question, is it the employer's right or is it the government's obligation?
Well, I think what most of the world, and we can see we're really a singular outlier, believes is that this is a right that's inherent for all people and that we have to do what we need to do to make sure they all have access to it.
Jody Hyman of McGill University, her new book, co-authored with Allison Earle, is titled Raising the Global Floor, Dismantling the Myth That We Can't Afford Good Working Conditions for Everyone. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much, Diane.
And thanks to all for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.